called active transportation. Bicycling uses no fuel but what the rider consumes. But roads are largely paid for by a tax on fuel. So are bicycle riders freeloaders? Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Anchorage has a draft bicycle plan. Boston is working on one. And Portland and Sitka are already there. Our number, 1-800-478-8255, toll-free. In Anchorage, a local call at 550-8422. Email talk at APRN.org. We're talking bicycles today on Talk of Alaska, statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by First National Bank Alaska, working shoulder to shoulder with Alaskan businesses for nearly a century. Member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Well, the subject is bicycles for utilitarian transportation, not to mention sustainability, not to mention livable cities, not to mention exercise and many other things. But how are we all going to get along? Because it's changing. In my own town of Anchorage, as the weather has warmed up, the number of bicycles has multiplied already to an unprecedented degree. There are more and more bicyclists on the road. Now, they're going to have different levels of experience, and it's not at all clear what the rules are. I mean, there are rules, there are laws, but maybe if we talk it out a little bit, we can get a little better feeling for how motorized vehicle drivers and people-powered vehicle peddlers can get along. Because obviously they are in many places, like for instance Portland. With me by telephone from her office in Portland is the author of the forthcoming book, Joyride, One Woman's Journey, Empowering People and Transforming Communities, Mia Burke. Mia, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thank you.
She joins us from Portland. And Mia, as I understand it, you are a guiding force behind making Portland what I understand is quite the bicycle-friendly city.
Well, I was the bicycle program coordinator for the city of Portland in the 90s. We adopted a bicycle master plan in 1996, and we started adding bikeways to the city. We built a network of 275 miles of bikeways, of bike lanes and paths and neighborhood bike boulevards. And we started encouraging people to ride. We started adding bike parking. We started doing bike safety education and training and encouragement activities. And the city has changed quite a bit. It's pretty incredible to see the number, the investment that the government has made in bicycle infrastructure and promotion has paid off in a big, big way. It's really hands down the best transportation investment we've made in Portland. We've increased bicycling from less than 1% of daily commute trips to about 8% of daily commute trips. And then if you add on all the other trips that people make, we've actually got in some parts of the city up to 30% of people using the bicycle for daily transportation for all kinds of activities, going to the store, or going to school, or just visiting friends or going to work, whatever, all kinds of activities.
You said 30%? 30%?
In some neighborhoods it's as high as 30%.
Whoa.
Not throughout the whole city. There's still some parts of the city that have a long way to go. But really, the inner part of the city, which is a little denser and a little flatter, we have a very high, really, it's very significant. On the bridges in downtown Portland, we have five bridges right in the heart of downtown over the Willamette River. And so you can really get a marker from looking at people going from east to west across the bridges. We have now on about 17% of the bridge traffic is bicycle traffic. And it's actually 17,000 daily bike trips on those bridges.
Wow.
And it's not something that people scoff at anymore. When I was in the 90s, people would say it's a waste of money. It's taxpayer money and it's fuel tax, so it's not fair to spend that money on bicycles. But now nobody says that anymore because it's so beneficial to the city because it's keeping congestion down. And it's good for people's health, and it's good for the economy, and it's good for livability, and it's something that that people are embracing across the spectrum of the city.
Mia, you are obviously a capable spokesperson, an advocate for bicycling. I want to ask you a little bit of an engineering question. Bridges, for the most part, were built some time ago because they cost so much more to build now. How did you pull it off? Bridges are also notoriously dangerous for bicycles because they don't usually have lanes for bikes. Sometimes they have sidewalks. How did you pull this off to where bicyclists were comfortable with your bridges?
Yeah, great question. In the 90s, we had a community conversation about bicycling for a couple years, and bridges were the number one complaint that people had, that they could not be expected to bicycle. There was no way they would bicycle unless we made our bridges more bike-friendly. So we did a study of our bridges, and there's really eight that have the potential for bicycling on them. We did a study, and it came up with a list of recommendations to make them more bicycle and pedestrian-friendly. Started applying for federal, state, and local funding and developing public-private partnerships. And over time, invested about $12 million in upgrading four bridges, and the fifth one's actually going to be upgraded. This is actually under construction right now.
$12 million is peanuts when it comes to public works.
Well, you know, our whole bikeway network cost about $50 million for 275 miles of bikeways. $50 million is about what we'd spend on, like, one lane of highway or some interchange upgrade project. So it's really a tremendous bang for the buck. Now, and the bulk of that $12 million actually went to one bridge where we hung a bike and pedestrian path off of a railroad bridge.
Oh, I love it.
And it is great. And we've done that on two bridges. We've widened the sidewalks by cantilevering stuff outward. One bridge we took away, we traded off one travel lane on a six-lane bridge for two bike lanes. So that bridge now has five travel lanes and two bike lanes. One bridge had pretty decent wide sidewalks, and we just fixed all the entrances. All the bridges to get up onto the bridges can be really scary, and there's a lot of conflict points, so we improved all the conflict points. And then the one bridge that's under construction now has also, we're adding a path that we're hanging off of the side of the bridge.
Wow, hanging off. You make Anchorage's problem sound tame. We're talking with Mia Burke. She is a consultant who promoted making Portland bicycle friendly successfully, as we hear. With us in the office is Lori Skanke of the Municipality of Anchorage's Traffic Department. And the reason I bring this up is because there is a bicycle plan in draft form right now, and we're coming up on the deadline for comments, right, Lori?
That's right. Originally, we'd planned for the 30th of April, but we've had a request from Assemblyperson Sheila Selkrig, and so we pushed it out a week till the 7th.
Oh, well, that's still not much time.
No, but,
that's a lot of pages you got in front of you. that sound effect you were hearing there was not something going on in your radio, but it was actually Lori turning the pages.
Sorry about that. actually, so far I've gotten over 80 comments, and most of them are very constructive and really helpful. And keep sending them in, because it's going to take me a while to put the chart together to reconcile all the comments. So up until I have to submit to the AMATS technical committee, I'll keep taking them.
Well, the traffic department puts these counters out sometimes.
Yes.
Just as kind of a cable goes across the road and counts cars. Do you have any way of counting bicycles? I always had a feeling when I ride over one of those on a bicycle, it doesn't even register.
You know, I haven't done any research to find out if those do count bicycles. We do have trail counters, and we've been counting trails for the last 6-8 years. And, of course, we also have volunteers that go out on Bike to Work Day and count. And I still need some helpers there. But
really? Well, that's coming right up, too.
That is May 15th, yeah. Friday, and we'll be out from 6:30 to 9 counting people.
And I can answer that question. We can use the tube counters to count bikes if we just stretch the tubes across the bike lane or the path.
Oh, really?
And if you stretched across the whole road, it can't differentiate between the motor vehicle and the bicycle.
Yeah.
But you can use it on bike lanes. There's also, as Lori said, you can use hand counts. We do a lot of that here in Portland, where we get paid staff or volunteers to do counts. There's also a number of different electronic counting devices. Some of them are infrared. Some of them are cameras, and we've used cameras before to do counts. Some of them are sensitive pads that are put underneath the roadway. And then some of them are, you can use loop detectors, which are used to, that are buried magnetic coils in the pavement that are used to control signal operation. If you put them in a bike lane, you can actually tie those in with the signal system and use those to count bikes as well.
Oh, man, you're all over the engineering side of this too, Mia. You're a wonderment.
Well, I have a consulting firm, and we, over the last 10 years, we've been working all over the United States and Canada and a little internationally, helping cities become more bicycle and pedestrian friendly, installing about 5,000 miles of bikeways and walkways, and really helping to transform communities to realize the benefits that bicycling can bring.
Well, hey, Lori, the Anchorage plan, I think almost has to be adaptive management when you think about it. Because if you don't have too much of an assessment of what the current traffic is, and what you've done is you've basically, as I understand it, on very little money, taken a bunch of comment from current users and tried to develop possible commute routes for them. But you know, the minute that you make things easier for bicycles, then there'll be more bicycles. And, you know, because certain places you just wouldn't think about it. Like, for instance, in our geography of Anchorage, the hillside, you know, maybe there's just like O'Malley is something you don't want to handle.
Well, O'Malley's a specific example that they are going to be doing road improvements in the next couple years. So we have actually highlighted O'Malley Road as needing bicycle lanes and a separated path.
Yeah, because, you know, for one thing, it's just dangerous the way it is right now.
Yeah.
A bicycle is going to go uphill. And guess what, folks? When you go uphill, you go slower.
Yeah, and you tend to weave a little bit, too.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing that we did with our plan is we, because we didn't have a lot of money to put together, we tried to be economically inclined at how we wanted to implement it. And we went and we measured most of the roads in town so that we could figure out which roads were already wide enough that we could implement bike lanes on. So a lot of our improvements are on roads that are already wide enough. There's only one project, which is Lake Otis Boulevard, where we're talking about in the future putting in bike lanes. And to do that, we'd have to decrease the amount of space to the pathway, and then there'd be some room for bike lanes. But that's used by a lot of people. So
I talked to somebody who was involved in the AMATS process back when they decided to make A and C into couplets. And I can't even imagine how boring this must be to somebody in a town that doesn't know any of these streets. So I won't stay on this too long. But still, what he told me was that they deliberately designed A Street so to be broad enough that you could get more bicycle use on there. And I said, and then you put a bike path that meanders all over the place and has an impossible hill on it. And then if you actually try and ride in the road, sure, there's all that shoulder space, but it's not plowed. So you have a big berm that's going to knock you right over.
Mm-hmm.
So it just didn't work. So that seems like a prime candidate for bike lanes because it's plenty wide. There's a whole lot of pavement there.
It is plenty wide. And actually, we're putting together a bike to work day map right now. And it'll show A Street as a wide shoulder just because there's no bike lane markings or signs. But that's one of the candidates we do want to turn into bike lanes. And you know, maintenance follows along. I mean, I just sent an email this morning to maintenance, Muni and DOT, saying, can you please get out there and at least start on Elmore and get the bike lane cleared? Because we only have 8 miles right now of bicycle lanes in Anchorage. So let's at least get out. And you know, the drivers just have to realize they may have to adjust their equipment. And I know Mia talked about that a little bit. I may have to get out there and ride around with them. I like her idea of doing that.
Well, there's no substitute for that, ground mm-hmm. truthing. And I think that's also a good argument for getting some good comments in right now on this plan.
Exactly. And we're getting all kinds of comments, like everything from, you know, specific, we'll make this road here, or sometimes they're a little open-ended. So if people can be specific, it really helps us.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, mine are extremely specific because I got my routes. You know, I think every regular user of a bicycle probably has a route figured out,
mm-hmm.
and they know where the trouble spots are, the aggravating places and the places where it gets a little dangerous and so forth. Let's take a phone call, and then we'll go to our guest in Sitka. But right now, let's talk to Douglas in Petersburg. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Douglas.
Good morning.
Hi.
I wanted to address, it's great that there are just, that I joined the show a little late, so I didn't catch it all. But it's great in Anchorage where you've got bigger DOTs and you've actually got room for bike lanes. But here in Petersburg, we have one bike lane. It's not in town. It goes goes out the road towards Scow Bay. In town, if you are at all safety conscious and you don't want to ride on the sidewalks, especially downtown, which happens to be illegal,
it does.
Then you're riding in the road. So what about the small places?
Yeah, it's a good question, and I don't let's see if Mia wants to try and handle that.
Well, I think every place has the potential to become more bicycle friendly. You know, you need a plan. It's just like having a blueprint for a house. Figure out where you're going to put bike lanes and how you're going to get them in. There's certainly a great potential to put in bike lanes on a lot of streets by either tightening up lanes, by reducing lane widths. We call that kind of a lane diet, or by swapping off travel lanes or parking lanes for bike lanes. That can
be. But you haven't seen Southeast Alaska. I mean, you know, sometimes there's great geographical, topographical constraints on these on these streets. I mean, it seems that
especially
sometimes
when you're building roads on Muskeg.
Yeah. So it seems like maybe there you can have a situation where you can build an expectation, you know, sort of steer the traffic to certain areas where there'd be an expectation of the part of the motorists that there's likely to be bicyclists there. Because the fact of the matter is the bicyclists do have a right to the road.
Yeah, I think that's
I got honked at one time for riding in the middle road because I don't see a whole lot on my right side. I don't want to risk knocking off somebody's side view mirror. And so it's partially, you know, keeping the cars intact, which need their mirrors. I got honked at for riding in the middle of the road where, you know what, I was using where I've got all my safety equipment, et cetera, on my bike. And just because I'm taking up the road where it's and I'm not going half the speed of the motorized vehicles, I got honked at.
Yep.
People, not everybody's willing to do that.
Douglas, and it's all I can say is that I think over time there is an educational process that does set in. I mean, if you were to be in France, you would erupt in curses at somebody who dared to infringe on your lane. If you were on a bicycle, that's just simply the way it's done, and everybody knows it. And nobody honks bicyclists in France. Let me tell you, I don't know what would happen. I wouldn't dare.
I just wish there was some actual decent turn signal systems for bikes. I mean, how ridiculous is it? You have to put your arm out 20 feet before a stop sign.
You might need that arm for braking.
Yeah, or you know, keeping upright.
Well, you're speaking for a whole lot of people, Douglas, and I want to thank you for your call. Stay tuned. I think some of your concerns are going to be coming back up. All right. Thank you, Douglas in Petersburg. It is Talk of Alaska. The telephone number is 1-800-478-8255. Get in now, probably, because they're starting to pile up. It's a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. There's always the email option, talk@aprn.org. And let's tune in on the Sitka situation. Matt Turner joins us by telephone from his home in Sitka. Matt, how you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having me, Steve.
How did you manage to pull this off? As I understand it, it's not all that easy to get the League of American Bicyclists to designate your city as bicycle-friendly.
Yeah, we did it on our first try, and I think we did it in less than 9 months. And I guess that was somewhat of a feat. So much of it had to do with the willingness of this community to have it happen, both within the bicycling community, but also a lot of folks that didn't bicycle but also saw that it was going to be a good thing. So city engineers, our hospital's injury prevention team was big on this, our health department, the police department. It was kind of like the perfect storm, I think, of the right people in the right time. And when we said, "Hey, let's do this," it put itself together. I mean, the plan wrote itself for us. It was great.
Yeah. Well, there's. I think you know these five E's. Maybe it's your rule even: engineering, education, encouragement, enforcement, and
evaluation.
Evaluation. I think you can also put enlistment. Sounds like that's what you really did, is you just enlisted all the different interests to be united in this. And then what do? You fill out an application? I mean, how does it work?
Well, it's an application, and the application is as much a process as anything else. It asks really, it asks good questions. Have you provided training to your engineers and planners on how to accommodate cyclists? Describe that. That's under engineering.
Huh.
How do you promote National Bike Month in May? That's under encouragement. Are there opportunities to rent bicycles in your community or other recreational opportunities that involve bicycling? So under each of those five E's, it asks some very specific questions. And you get together and you either go, wow, we've got that one nailed, or wait a minute, what are some simple things we can do to be able to answer yes to that question? And in Sitka's case, again, it was so nice because we went through and said, oh, we got that. And then there were a few that we didn't have, like, wow, we don't really have good downtown bicycle parking. Well, what can we do about it? And it was so easy. To say, well, we need to put in racks, and we know exactly where they need to go. And we managed to get that done in time to say, yes, we do, and here's a picture.